I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters, and you're listening to the Double Clutch Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, basketball fans of all ages, welcome to the Double Clutch Podcast with me, Hugh Hopkins. This week on the show, we have a special guest joining us to bring us some basketball expertise to proceedings. This guy, he's a respected coach, he's a writer, he's one of the most prolific podcasters on the planet with the back-to-back team on shows such as Nerder, She Wrote, and The Daily Ding. And he also actually has one of the coolest names in basketball. Ladies and gentlemen, let me introduce Dave Dufour. Dave, how you doing, man?
I am fantastic. It's funny that how many people mention that I'm a prolific podcaster. I do podcasts probably too much.
Yeah, I don't know. It's, you know, you've got your thing. Everybody respects you for it. You can't complain about that.
I don't know about everybody, but I will take the compliment. I appreciate that.
So actually, I was going to ask, well, your name, Dave Dufour. I mean, there's a lot of cool names in basketball. I mean, especially with podcasters, you've got Zach Lowe, and which leads to the Low Post, and you've got the Dunked On podcast. But Dave Dufour, do you know where your name comes from?
That is French Swiss.
Yeah.
French, so yeah, awesome. Yeah. Sort of that. I guess western part of Switzerland. Where, you know, it's very French there, like near Basel, I think is how it's pronounced, the town.
Cool, cool.
Yeah, yeah.
But you're based in Texas now, that's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I live in Texas for the time being. We'll see what happens.
Cool. So I don't know whether you've been watching much basketball this weekend, Dave, but it's been a busy weekend as ever in the league.
Yeah, I mean, I did watch that fantastic Bucks-Raptors game from yesterday, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think that's probably a good place to start, because we've seen Bucks versus Raptors already once this season, but, you know, that was when I think Kawhi was due to sit, but then Giannis was a last-minute scratch. But what did you see last night? Did the sort of MVP versus MVP candidates clash? Did that live up to the hype for you?
I mean, to a certain degree it did, but more than anything, I think we saw that these teams can bother each other defensively. There's a lot of length on the court at any one time. The lineup combinations I thought were fascinating, and the head-to-head matchups going to Siakam early at the five was a surprise from the Raptors for me. I don't know, man. It was fun. I won a 7-game series of this in May, and I'm not going to settle for that not happening. I am going to do whatever I can. I'm going to try to arrange fixing games, whatever I can do to get a 7-game series, because I think it will go 7 if they play, and I think we could wind up with a series for the ages.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I mean, what's your contacts in the like? Can we in the league? What, you know, can we contact Adam Silver and ask
I'm gonna send an email. I'm gonna send an email to the league office and just see if we can rig this. but yeah, I mean, it's a lot of fun, and I mean, obviously the marquee matchup of the weekend, and it was a great game. I thought it really lived up to the hype.
Yeah, definitely. Moving Siakam to the big so early, I think it was a pretty positive move in terms of you like to see long rangy bigs going against each other, and you know, I think that has the potential to sort of throw up a few interesting scenarios if we did go sort of 7 games. You know, you can see him and perhaps a backer going back and forth against each other, to, you know, stretching each other out to the wing, opening up the floor wide. You do have a pretty good number of three-point shooters on either side. What happened with Kyle Lowry last night? That wasn't one of his finest performances.
Yeah, he's actually had a rough few games here in a row. I believe he's dealing with a back injury, but, you know, he played 34 minutes in that game. I don't know if playing that many minutes with a back injury is smart. he was still +7 for the game. I mean, so if we just want to look at whether or not they won those minutes with him on the court, they did. I will say 7 free throws from the Raptors is the difference in this game. The Bucks shot 20 free throws, and the Raptors only had 7, and that's a huge difference.
Yeah, I mean, you're not really stopping Giannis, but I mean the fact that you can get quite a few other guys sort of making their way to the line, you know, and you've got a pretty good couple of shooters on that team. If we are going to see sort of a long series, I mean, it's still early days, but I think for the fact that Giannis is simply unstoppable, no matter how much, you know, Kawhi can sort of put up a fight, I think there's a real danger that I think the shooters could end up killing the Raptors, because I don't know. I mean, it's like I said, it's still early days, but in terms of the whole team being strong enough defensively to stop the shooting of the Bucks in a 7-game series, I think that's where I would sort of. I think I'd pick Milwaukee. I don't know how you feel about that.
I'm not there yet, but I will say for them to be playing as well as they have this early under a new coach, I think that's something. I mean, Giannis is like, I think sixth in scoring and fifth in rebounding, and just incredible. I mean, just having an incredible season. And Brooke Lopez being the greatest shooter in the history of basketball. I mean, it's just there's so much happening in Milwaukee. And they don't forget, they just got George Hill. They didn't have him last night. And that's going to be a huge depth piece for them. So, yeah, I mean, I think Milwaukee and Toronto has to get the benefit of the doubt as the best team in the East. But I think Milwaukee is nipping on their heels.
How much do you think George Hill could actually bring, though? I mean, he's bounced around a few teams now, and he's got this sort of, I don't know, air of inconsistency and a bit of a reputation now following him around. What do you think he can offer?
I thought he was pretty good last year for the Cavs after he got traded. And you know, he missed those free throws in the finals, and everyone forgets because J.R. Smith ran the wrong direction. But yeah, I think George Hill is going to be fine. Another long defender who will defend there, can hit spot up threes, can attack off the dribble. I mean, he's going to be a backup, I'm assuming. Maybe they'll run him out there with Bledsoe a little bit, but yeah, I think he's going to contribute. I think. Now we'll find out. I mean, I also thought Tyson Chandler was washed because of how he played in Phoenix, but then I found out no, he just quit in Phoenix. So, you know, what do I know?
George Hill probably, I mean, I'm a big San Antonio Spurs fan. I remember him fondly as a pretty good backup. Taking him off the team, it was like removing a piece of our hearts as San Antonio Spurs fans. But, you know, he did bring a lot coming off the bench, and I think that's probably the best role for him. I don't think, when I say he's brought inconsistencies to teams previously, I think that's why I think he's probably more suited to being a player coming off the bench. I don't know if you agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that at this point in his career, it probably makes sense. You know, I mean, he was fantastic in Indiana for all those years, and in particular when Paul George was out. I mean, he had a great season as the primary guy there. So, you know, I don't think he's fallen off that much. Let's see what happens when he's on a good team that actually places an emphasis on defending, which the Cavs did not. And let's see what happens.
You're a pretty decent coach, but is your reputation sort of?
I don't know about that, but you know.
Well, I must say, actually, before I go too much further into this, I'm a big fan of Nerdish. You wrote the podcast that you do with David Thorpe, who's an excellent coach. I do claim to be a coach myself, not a very good one, but you know, we're rocking a 500 record in our local league at the moment. So I'm pretty pleased with that. So it's cool to be able to pick someone's brain about coaching. The two teams that we're talking about, the Bucks and the Raptors, both got new coaches this year. Mm-hmm. Who's having the better coaching season? The rookie you know, Nick Nurse, where he's got this MVP caliber person, or is it Coach Budenholzer for the Bucks, who's really changed the system and sort of made the most of all the positives that the Milwaukee team has?
I'll lean toward Bud. I think to come into a new situation is a little bit different than what Nurse did, where he kind of, you know, ascended from assistant to head coach. Essentially, they didn't change much about their system this year. Yes, they got two really great players. I mean, remember, they traded DeMar DeRozan, who is fine, for Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard. So they actually added two starters, high-level defenders. Danny Green's a great shooter. Kawhi Leonard is, like you said, one of the five best players in the league. And also Pascal Siakam has taken a little leap. Yeah. They're starting Ibaka instead of Valanciunas. So, like, I actually think that Toronto was just such a great situation. It's hard to tell what Nurse has done, okay? I will say his openness to lineup flexibility, where he's willing to experiment during the regular season with what works, different rotations, bringing different guys in, playing guys new positions, things like that. That's great, and I give him a lot of credit for that. But for Budenholzer to come into this team that had next to no offensive system, had underachieved, terrible defensive habits, and to change it this much in this short amount of time, that's pretty remarkable. Yes, Giannis is incredible, but let's not forget that Bledsoe looked like he was done.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I haven't seen him defend like this since he was on the Clippers. He's got Brooke Lopez there shooting like, I don't know, 18 threes a game. You know, Thon Maker actually looking like a decent player. Brogdon looking good. He's done a really good job there. And more than anything, he's putting them in a position to succeed, which is the coach's job, really. Like, you want to set guys up for success and then get out of the way. And I think when you see, and this is why I hate college basketball, when coaches overcoach, you get more bad than good. Yeah. And Bud is clearly not doing that. He's doing a really great job, I think. And in particular, to get this sort of these sorts of results this early, that's pretty quick. So,
yeah, I mean, going back to, you know, to Phil Jackson's time with you know, with the Bulls and even the Lakers, you know, he was well known for sort of, you know, when the team was in a slump, he was just letting them play. You know, you need to play yourself out of the hole. You need to learn how to bounce back yourself. And I think I don't think Bud has those same characteristics as Phil. They're very different people. But I think he does have that sort of coaching style where, as you said, you know, he's implemented the system. He's got players working well within it. For the large part, he is letting Giannis run things how he wants to, when he can. The reason I sort of tip my hat to Bud, like yourself, is the closeness that Giannis had to Jason Kidd previously. You know, Giannis was quite crushed when he learned that Jason Kidd was going, and it takes a special kind of coach to be able to say it, to be able to come in and say, you know what, We can do this. I mean, you know, he obviously has not disrespected Jason Kidd in front of Giannis at all, because, you know, they get on well from what I can tell from the outside. I mean, I'm only watching it from over here in the UK, but you know, they look as if they've got pretty good rapport. Reports suggest that, you know, they get on well together. So I think that's quite an achievement as a new coach, like you said.
I'd be curious to see what Giannis happens to think now about Jason Kidd.
Yeah.
Now that he's had a real coach for a few months.
Well, so. Yeah. I mean, I was listening to, I think it was the Bill Simmons podcast recently, and he was saying how, you know, Giannis basically came over from pretty much abject poverty, you know, and came to the States, and everything's so shiny and bright and new and exciting that, well, whatever happens, you know, he just gets a little bit excited about that one thing. But, you know, then something even better comes along, and all of a sudden that's the new great shiny thing. And, you know, not to make a sort of mockery of where he's come from, but I think it's, like you said, it's comparing someone, a coach like Jason Kidd, who, I mean, I had high hopes for him, and I think in New Jersey he sort of did have, you know, a few positive moments, but I think, yeah, he never really worked it out in Milwaukee after that first season there, I don't think. And there was just no growth for any of the players.
Yeah.
So we've done the coaches, but what about Giannis and Kawhi then? Because those two guys, arguably they're 1 and 2 in MVP rankings. I mean, it's still early days. We did an MVP post on the Double Clutch website recently, and I actually said if Steph Curry comes back and starts getting the Warriors winning at the same clip that they were when, you know, they started off the season when he was with the team, then by the end of the year, I reckon he could be in with a big shout. Someone else pulled for Joel Embiid. But personally, I would say Kawhi and Giannis are pretty high up on that list. What say you?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'd probably put Giannis above Kawhi. I think Giannis has got to be number one, and then, you know, Embiid or Curry two. I think KD has to be up there. I think LeBron has to be up there. Any MVP list that doesn't have LeBron in the top five right now, probably just have to ignore, because even though he's not playing defense, right?
Yeah,
I mean, they're winning games that they probably shouldn't be winning, you know, like on paper. I didn't think they would be this good this early. Now they're winning a lot of games that they should win. And LeBron is doing LeBron things. So I think LeBron should be on any of these lists. Well, it's easy to forget, man, because we're just so used to it.
Yeah.
And no, LeBron is clockwork. But, you know, we can't let that happen.
I at the start of the season, I put when we were making our usual terrible predictions of what would happen with the season, I put Lakers in the top four seed, and a lot of people I think laughed a little bit, and even myself, I sort of wasn't so sure in my convictions, you know. But I'm pretty glad I did at this stage, because I think they're probably maybe not much higher than a third seed, but I reckon they can get into that fourth spot. What do you reckon?
I mean, we'll see. They're overachieving at the moment, and a lot of teams are underachieving. So I'm going to wait. I'm going to reserve judgment until I see what stuff looks like after Christmas.
Okay. I mean, it is a pretty big logjam in the West. Speaking of which, you currently reside in Texas. Not that that gives you, any more sort of knowledge or whatever than myself, perhaps. I don't know how often you do get to watch teams.
I talk to people. So
cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so maybe you can provide some more inside knowledge than someone like myself can. But let's talk about the mess in Texas. I don't know about you, but I'm totally confused by those three teams. I mean,
Dallas in a good way, right?
Dallas in a great way. I mean, on this side of the pond, I'm not gonna lie, we were much higher on Luka Doncic than it felt like anyone in the States was. I think we'd perhaps seen a bit more of him. We understood what he was capable of, but I'll be honest, I didn't expect it to be this good. You know, he's basically, I mean, he might be the best rookie since LeBron. He's taken Dallas on his back. I mean, I would say that they've been without Dirk Nowitzki, but honestly, I don't know. I don't know if Dirk would be able to offer anything to this team. We'll soon find out. But I mean, Dallas went from this team that were gonna not be very good, and they, you know, I think they're 13-11 is their current record. They're doing pretty well. And you've got the Spurs, who, I mean, who knows what was going to be happening with them. They started the season without three of their guards, and they also had, like, you know, an MVP caliber player leave, along with the best shooter they had, and another point guard left and another one retired. So I'm not going to get too too deep on that at the moment because it's a very emotional subject for me. But also you have the Rockets, who everybody expected to be great, and I mean they're terrible. What's going on with those three teams, and why are they not what we expected?
Some of this is easy. All right, the Mavericks are overachieving, plain and simple. Luka's better earlier than I expected. And I've watched Luka for the last 3 years over in Spain. Okay.
Yeah.
So I've watched as much Luka as just about anybody. He's better now than I thought he would even be coming in. And he's looked really great. A lot of that is he's got more swagger than most rookies. And by swagger, I mean confidence, things that actually matter on a basketball court. It's not just about skill. Your confidence to execute the skill that you know you have. And in particular, you watch that game against the Rockets the other night, in the last couple of minutes of that game, and he took it over. That was not a rookie.
Yeah.
So that's Dallas. They've been overachieving. I mean, that bench unit has been the best in basketball, and they're playing their butts off. So, you know, hats off to them. Rick Carlisle doing another Coach of the Year type job. The Rockets, hey, their defense has fallen off. What a shock. Losing Mbamute and Trevor Ariza actually mattered. Also, an underrated part of this, losing Ryan Anderson mattered. Having a guy who was a threat from 30 feet the way he was, that affects the geometry of their offense. And so I think we're seeing, you know, you need certain guys to be successful. And you can't just plug in two-way players and expect it to be fine. And in San Antonio, this one's tough for me, man, because I'm a huge Pop fan.
Yeah.
There's multiple things at work here. First of all, they lost three starters, actually four starters from the beginning of last season, but three starters who actually started the majority of games last year. They lost DeJounte Murray to the torn ACL.
Yeah.
They lost Danny Green, and they lost Kyle Anderson. Well, that's three more than capable defenders in DeJounte, one of the four or five best point of attack defenders in the league. And that has caused a ripple effect throughout their entire defense. And defense is why they're losing. Now, I could point out the offensive numbers and say, look, they don't shoot enough threes. They hit so many threes that they just shot more threes. They would probably win more games. We all know this, but the defense is why they're losing games. They have leaned in to this 1988 offense that they're running that generates all these contested mid-range looks. And that's fine, but the defense is why they're losing. LaMarcus Aldridge looks terrible without a premier point of attack defender like DeJounte Murray. And then you don't have Danny Green and Kyle Anderson there to help out on the wings. And, you know, unfortunately, they just don't have the guys. That's it, plain and simple.
Yeah, you're right in many respects that I think the, you know, without a point guard and without a big, LaMarcus is terrible on defense. He can be pretty solid on defense. Last year he was, you know, next to Pau for most of the year, and a couple of years ago he was next to Duncan a lot of the time. And actually he can play okay one-on-one defense, but I don't think he's got the I don't think he's got the awareness to really play great help defense, especially when you do have you know, good offensive players coming into the lane because they can't be stopped by any good wing defenders like Kawhi and like DeJounte in previous years. The whole 3-point shooting thing. Now, I haven't really ranted on this just yet, but so I'm gonna try not to. I'm gonna try to contain myself a little bit. But Greg Popovich's system has never shot many 3-point shooters.
Even
during that that brilliant season where you know people have dubbed it the beautiful game, that wasn't based on them shooting 3-pointers. It was based on spacing, and it was based on passing,
and they roughly shot the same number of threes then that they're shooting now, but there's a difference. And I'm cutting you off because I've pushed back on this already.
Okay,
the difference is that the average per team per game since then has gone up 7 threes. So in that year, they shot 21. I think they shoot like 21 a game now.
Yeah.
The average team shot 27. Well, now it's 34. And so now you're running into an actual math problem. They shoot like 40% on threes. If they just took 5 more a game, they would actually mitigate the math problem quite a bit. If they were up to what league average was then, if they just kept up with the league, it'd be fine. But there is a legitimate math problem, but that's not why they're losing games.
No, that's
not solely.
Yeah, that's the point that I get stuck on is actually the in terms of offensive rating and points scored and what have you, I think they're 10th in the league currently, or around about that area on offense. The problems they are struggling with, so they're scoring, you know, they are producing enough points to win games regardless mm-hmm. of whether they're shooting threes or not. But the real problem is the defense. And I think there's been a sort of lack of looking at the additional numbers. I mean, yes, there are fewer threes being thrown up, but I think Popovich has always thrown up fewer threes. In almost all of his championship teams, he was below league average. And I don't think that's a reason why. I don't think it's the sole reason why they're losing. It's not helping, especially when they do have such terrible, terrible defense at the moment. But yeah, I think it's more the defense than it is the 3-point shooting.
Yeah.
So moving on to the onto the Rockets, then you covered them a bit. I mean, their defense, as you said, you know, it's a recurring theme, isn't it? Really, defense wins championships, and both these teams at present are far away from championships. So they've lost some of their defensive players, but I think it's not so much losing those, it's replacing them with virtually nothing. They replaced them with Carmelo Anthony, and that was, I think everybody can see now that it was a pretty bad decision, but I sort of felt that
I think everyone saw it at the time.
Yeah. So I guess what I'm going to get to then is Daryl Morey has been one of the sort of, you know, shining examples of what a GM should be. But this season, is he the worst in the league?
Oh, no.
No?
No, I wouldn't say that. I think that, first of all, we don't know the internal dynamics. We don't know why they didn't bring Ariza back. We don't know if there was like an instruction to try to get to duck the tax. Remember, they had to re-sign Chris Paul and they had to re-sign Clint Capella. No one knew that Chris Paul was going to be this washed this soon. I mean, the guy was really good in you know, up until he got hurt in May.
And that's the point, isn't it? Is that he always gets hurt.
Yeah.
I just think why would you even consider signing Chris Paul to such a long contract, but such a huge contract? I mean, yes, he might have gone elsewhere, but quite frankly, I think it was on the table how bad he was going to be at the end of last season. I think he had hit a wall where he could not play X amount of games per year. He could not make such lengthy runs into the postseason. It was clear. I think that's going to be a monumental mistake that's going to really hamper the team, you know, long term. Now, I admit, I thought he probably had another season and a half left in him of elite basketball. And there's, you know, there's games and there's flashes and there's times when he passes, he makes assists that only Chris Paul could ever make. But that could be... That was probably the demise of this team when he signed that 4-year contract.
Yeah. It's not going to look great in 2 years when you're paying him $43 million.
And, I mean, James Harden is still doing James Harden things. I don't think there's much fault with his game apart from the fact that he's probably gone back to playing the type of defense that he was when he was when Vine was a thing, you know, and he was just being looped and looped.
He won the MVP, right? So I think that, you know, look, I don't know, man. He's the best post. He's one of the best post defenders in the league, which is wild. But they don't put him there enough. I would actually just have him guard fours for the most part.
Yeah, that's not a bad idea, and it's probably what I think is the right call. Now that the
problem
got,
is wear and tear. So like if you have him guarding like Derek Favors, he's just going to try to post him up the whole time. And while he may do a good job, he's going to be tired. And they need him so much for offense. It's a mess. It's not good. There's actually a chance the Rockets might miss the playoffs. Like, there's a real chance.
So I was going to get into that. Let's go. Have you? I'm pretty sure you guys have got it. I think it's an American format. But did you ever have the television show Play Your Cards Right?
No, never heard of it.
Okay, so basically, we had this this wonderful old gentleman in the UK called Bruce Forsyth, and he's this sort of proper song and dance man, but he then got into television a few years later, and they had this one game where it was basically just a high low card betting sort of thing. So
okay,
it was a Saturday night television where he'd hold up a card and he'd get and the card would be number two, and you know he'd say higher, higher, and then it'd be, you know, seven or eight, and you'd start to think, oh, which way am I supposed to go? So let's go win totals for the three teams in Texas.
Sure.
If we're saying that, I mean, let's start off with 41 and 41. Okay, that's sort of, I imagine, where an average of where they are at the moment. To be honest, I haven't done the totals, but you know, they're all floating around 500.
Yes.
So fast forward to the end of the regular season, San Antonio Spurs, higher or lower than 41 and 41?
Man, that's rough. The metrics are just so bad.
Bear in mind, you might make me cry with your answer.
Yeah, I mean, I'm going to say I think that they're right at 41 and 41. I think they're a 500 team. I do think that that's who they are.
Okay. So now, moving on to the Houston Rockets, who you just said might miss the playoffs. Now, I'm guessing the
I'm going to walk that back here too. Don't worry, I'm ready to walk it back.
Okay, so I'm guessing that that something like 48 wins is probably going to be getting you into the
I'm thinking it's like it could be 43.
Really? That low?
Could be as low as 43, yeah.
Okay. So is that where you'd put the Houston Rockets?
I think Houston makes it 45 or 46 wins. I think they figure out a way. I mean, now listen, a lot of this is me saying they're going to go get somebody. They're going to go get J.R. Smith. They're going to go get Bazemore. They're going to go get Trevor Ariza. but I do think that they're going to make a move just because Daryl Morey doesn't sit on his hands. The Spurs actually don't make many deals in season.
No, that's
so.
That's
I think this is their team. But I think Houston, I think they'll wind up 45, 46 wins.
Okay. You'll have to forgive me. There's some sort of Santa sleigh being dragged outside.
That's all right. That's all right. Didn't realize you lived in the North Pole.
Yeah. No, it's a local council thing where they sort of. You know, they sing.
Yeah, they go around and sing.
Sing carols and raise money for local charities and stuff. So for the next few minutes, while they're going up and down this street, you might actually hear some carols in the
background. That's okay. Actually, one of the things that I love about the UK is that everywhere has a very small town vibe in stuff like that, right? Like, that just doesn't happen in America anymore. and that's one of the things that I always love about visiting the UK. Is especially like if you go at Christmas time, like it feels like, you know, feels like Christmas.
Yeah, it certainly does. Have you spent much time here?
Yeah, I've spent a fair amount of time. Yeah.
Well, was it mainly for coaching duties, or have you ever
been on
vacation here?
Just on holiday. Spent a fair amount of time in London. Have ridden my motorcycle all over the UK. And yeah, spent a lot more time in Scotland. Well, actually, no, I've spent a lot of time in London though. So London, a lot of time in Scotland, and then time on a motorcycle, all
going
over.
Going up and down the motorways.
Yeah, well, back roads, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Fair enough. A good place. I like it. The food gets a bad rap. I think it's bullshit. It's good food. Good
okay,
food.
Thanks for that. That's nice to hear someone an American, especially American in Texas, where you've got some of the best Mexican food in the world, I think, outside of Mexico.
Yeah. It's that was the one thing. So when I lived in Europe, that was the one thing that, and my wife and I had this conversation the other day, missing Mexican food. That was like the one really hard thing. The only good Mexican food I had the entire time I was there was in a small town in the Czech Republic called Spindler's Mill. I was there snowboarding, and there was a little Mexican restaurant in the village, and it was delicious.
Oh, wait, is that, is the Czech way of saying, is it Splendor of Mlin?
Yes.
Yes, I've spent time there. I spent time in the Czech Republic and yeah, went on holiday there. It's a beautiful little town.
Yeah, nice little village. Love the, like, I mean, that is like quintessential European ski town kind of feel to it. It's very small.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's pretty cool, man.
Yeah. There you go. Definitely. It's cool. So where were we? Back to basketball. The Dallas Mavericks.
Okay. If the Mavericks are 500, Rick Carlisle is the coach of the year. Plain and simple.
Yeah.
No. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I think they probably wind up around 35 wins.
I actually think they're going to be closer to 500. I reckon they might be around 41, 42. That's not where I had them at the start of the year. But I think, yeah, I sort of agree with you in some senses. So far, my coach of the year is Budenholzer. But, I mean, it's serious. I'm seriously starting to, I don't know, maybe it's just because I'm so panicky about this season. And you know what? No, I'm not even going to say it, because it's sacrilege, really, to even think that any other coach really compares to Coach Popovich. But, I mean, I think, yeah, Rick this season has, well, he does every year, season in, season out. He has always put his team in the best position to win. He's doesn't always have the talent to win that many games, but in terms of how prepared his teams are, you never feel like he's ever in any danger of sort of losing his job because he's underprepared on something, and he's got his team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And he's got a great staff there, and I mean, they've just, you know, it's a top flight organization.
Yeah.
They just haven't had talent. That's been and that's the NBA, right? It's really hard.
Yeah.
If you strike out in free agency and you don't have high draft picks, which they typically don't, you know, it's hard to get talent.
True that. Well, speaking of lack of talent, I'm going to switch gears a little bit. Let's go to two teams that are going to be kind of important to UK fans in about a month's time. We have the NBA London event happening.
Oh yes, in January. That's right.
And
I forgot. I was actually thinking about coming over for that.
Oh really? Yeah, you should come on over. It'll be a terrible game.
I'm going to LA instead. Yeah.
Fair enough.
The weather will be a little better. Yeah,
most likely. So we've got the New York Knicks and the Washington Wizards. And
oof.
Yeah, that's my thought as well. So please, Dave, if you can, you're a pretty knowledgeable guy about the NBA, about basketball in general. Can you give UK fans any sort of hope, anything to look forward to with this game?
So the Knicks are fun. Okay, so they when they play their young guys and they get out and they run, and I mean, they're fun. Hopefully by then Kevin Knox is going to be all the way back from the ankle injury, and so he'll be playing more, looking better. Frank Ntilikina looks like he might be back in the rotation, I hope. Porzingis won't be back, so that's not, I don't know. Maybe Dwight Howard. No, Dwight Howard won't be back. I'm just trying to think of some. Yeah, I don't know. Maybe John Wall will try hard.
Will John Wall even be there?
Well, right. So that's the problem. God, that's a terrible game.
Yeah. Yeah, it kind of is. I mean, don't get me wrong. I am incredibly grateful for the NBA coming over to the UK. You know, it is a real highlight of the year for UK based fans. And every season, the tickets they sell, this year they sold out within minutes. And there's always a huge clamor afterwards to get onto the ticket reselling sites and things like that, and that causes a lot of controversy because the tickets inflate by they ended up costing around £1,000 each, which I guess is around, I don't know, 1,200 euro, maybe a bit more. You know, it's pretty expensive.
That's a lot.
Yeah, to spend all that money to watch these two teams, I mean, it's utterly, utterly disappointing. But at the same time, seeing NBA basketball players on home soil to us, you know, it is going to still be fun. I know we joke about John Wall, but he is one of the most talented players in the league.
Absolutely. Talent's not the problem.
Yeah. And historically, he has always taken a little while to actually get warmed up into the season. So maybe after he's had his Christmas dinner, maybe he'll sort of, you know, be in a jolly mood.
Maybe he'll be in shape.
I don't think he's going to be. But, you know, maybe he'll, feel sort of fresher about the season. I mean, the Eastern Conference is terrible. So maybe, he'll realize, oh, crap, we're actually in with the shot of making the playoffs. Maybe that's when he turns it on.
I don't know. I mean, I like to be an optimist, and hopefully the next month, things will settle down for the Wizards and then it become a better team. According to them, they're still the best team in the East, I guess. So hopefully you get a nice game. I mean, I think ultimately the Wizards should win and should win easily. So hopefully the Knicks put up a fight and the Wizards do some entertaining stuff. I mean, Bradley Beal is one of my favorite players to watch. John Wall's one of my favorite players to watch when he's playing well. The problem is he's not really moving, not doing much.
No.
Tom Haberstroh put out the stat. I mean, he's the slowest player in the league this year.
Yeah, I spotted that. That's really good work by Tom. It is really... I mean, I want to say it's kind of shocking. I think there are possibly a couple of players who are slower. I mean, what's Greg Monroe up to these days? Is he playing anywhere?
Well, you have to play to be slow. So,
yeah. So what are the biggest issues that the Washington Wizards face outside of Wall? Because, I mean, Bradley Beal is doing... It seems like he's still playing hard. It seems like he's still doing everything he can. But what are we talking about in terms of the supporting cast? I mean, have you seen anything from the likes of Otto Porter and Kelly Oubre? I was expecting big things from Kelly Oubre this season.
Okay, so Otto Porter, apparently he and John Wall have some chemistry issues. I mean, that's what it is. And so... You know, I don't know. I do believe they're going to wind up moving Otto Porter because of that three. You can't trade Beal. He's too good. You'd have to get a huge haul. You're probably not going to be able to move John Wall because his extension kicks in after this season. And it's a massive amount of money for a guy who, how good is he going to be? So Porter might be the guy that gets moved. And it's unfortunate, man, because he's going to go to another team and we're going to be able to see how good he is. I mean, he's a legit 3-and-D guy. And by three, I mean, like, he's like a 44-45% three-point shooter.
Yeah.
He's very, very good. And it sucks that him and John Wall can't get on the same page because he's the perfect guy for John Wall. He goes stand in the corner and he can hit threes all day. But John Wall's not doing enough to create those looks.
But you say about the big contracts. I mean, obviously the biggest and the scariest is John Wall's. So it's quite interesting that actually I think there's been more buzz around, more trade buzz around him than perhaps any other player on the Wizards. But that, you know, Otto Porter at the same time, that's a pretty hefty contract. I guess what I'm saying is, if he was moved elsewhere, do you think he's worth that, what is it, $24 million contract?
Otto Porter?
Yeah.
Yeah, Otto Porter's worth that $24 million contract right now.
Just not with the Washington Wizards.
Well, because, and it's only because he and Wall can't seem to get on the game on the same page. That's it. Yeah. It's the only reason to knock Porter is that they can't seem to figure it out. And I, you know, I'll put the blame on the point guard. It's your job as a point guard to make it work. That's it. I mean, plain and simple. And I've been given a hard time because people think I'm too hard on John Wall. I love John Wall. I love to watch him play when he is at his physical peak. He's fantastic. I think knee injuries have taken their toll on him a little bit. And obviously, he's a little heavy. But, you know, I have to judge you by what you do on the court. Plain and simple. And he has not lived up.
How much is Scott Brooks responsible, though?
Well, this is an interesting question. Maybe Randy Whitman wasn't the problem. Now, as a coach, part of your job is to be able to make these guys work together, to make these guys get along. I mean, on the court, at least. I don't care if they get along when the game is over.
Yeah.
But on the court, they've got to work together. And at a certain point, they're not defending. That's on the coach. And so I think that, you know, it's a real thing. I don't think he's going to get fired. Ted Leonsis is a cheapskate. He doesn't want to pay these guys. And also, by the way, I hardly ever think coaches should get fired for stuff like this. There's a certain point. If he loses the locker room, that's a different thing. That doesn't seem to be what's happening here. So, you know, I'm a fan of Scotty Brooks, the person. So it makes it tough for me.
Fair enough. It is always a bit more difficult to, remove personal personal relationships, biases, whatever. And I will sort of agree with you, although it will be I can hear my fellow contributor and fellow podcaster at Double Clutch, Joe Hulbert. I know he's not a particular fan of Scott Brooks and what he's been able to do.
A criticism of him would be this is the second place where he's had superstars and not been able to make it work.
Yeah, I think that's the same gripe as Joe, ultimately, is that, you know, he has played with a good number of all-stars. You know, he has been able to have access to elite talent in the NBA and not been able to put those guys in a position where... I don't know whether it's to do with the system or whether it's to do with managing personalities, but I think there are some criticisms out there that I think he may struggle to overcome in future coaching gigs. I'm not saying that's warranted, but that probably is going to be questioned about him. I think in terms of the system side of things, regardless of whether he can manage personalities or not, the system, it may seem basic, but it has got several teams, you know, deep into the playoffs in previous runs. So I don't know. It's a difficult question to answer. I'm personally of the opinion that the team probably needs a reboot.
They're two years overdue to blow it up. I mean, this is the truth. It's like this team, I think we saw this team's peak a couple seasons ago and they haven't ever gotten back there, and you're just hanging on. And in the NBA, unfortunately, the longer you hang on, the worse off you are. Guys lose value. Those contracts come through. Guys are making too much money and then they're harder to move. I mean, we're watching stuff like this happen all over the place all season. So, yeah, it's unfortunate, man, because I really liked that team was fun when they were like plucky, and now they're not.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess just going slightly deeper into the New York Knicks, I know you've had a bit of a say about them, but what do you make of you know, you spoke about them in the terms that they were fun, they were working hard. How much is that on David Fizdale?
Well, it seems like Fizdale has put a premium on effort, and yeah. I think for a young team that's important. You know, from a development standpoint, I don't love what's happening. You know, Moutier has looked better, but at the same time, like, Frank Ntilikina needs to get minutes.
Yeah.
Definitely. Kevin Knox needs to get minutes. I mean, if he's healthy, Mitchell Robinson needs to get minutes. Now, part of his is that he fouls too much, right? And so as long as there's some sort of plan in place so these guys are ramping their minutes up, that's great. But if not, then this is a lost season completely.
Long term, how are you feeling about Tim Hardaway? You know, he's on one of the bigger contracts on the team, I think. He's their leading scorer by far. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you do have a couple of... well, obviously you have Porzingis waiting in the wings, ready to come back. You know, it seems like... presently constructed. Now, I know they've definitely got a long way to go. But presently constructed, it sort of is Hardaway's team from, you know,
certainly,
in terms of the makeup. So should that be the case, or should we be looking to see them move him or restructure his role within the offense, especially when Porzingis comes back?
I think that they should be open to the idea of moving him. So if Memphis were to call them, I think Hardaway would be great in Memphis. If Memphis were to call him and offer a first and the Chandler Parsons contract, and then, you know, figure out a way to make it work, I would be interested in that if I were the Knicks. But Hardaway is still young. That contract's not that bad. That's starter money, and he's clearly a starter in the NBA, can score. Should be able to work well next to Knox and definitely Porzingis when he comes back. I don't know. I'm probably a little bit higher on Hardaway than a lot of people, but I do think having a guy that can get you 20 a night is useful.
Well, it's incredibly useful at the moment when, you know, they haven't really got anyone else who can do that. I mean, Enes Kanter, for all the reasons I love him, at the same time, I don't think he's ever going to be a 20-point scorer in the NBA. I simply don't think he's really built like that. You know, you do have... I mean, every time I go down the list of names for the Knicks, come across Mario Hezonja. Just a big fan of what he managed to do with Giannis a few weeks ago. But, you know, there isn't really a lot of other scoring players coming off the bench on this team, and I think they're going to need to make some changes, because as much as some of these guys they have potential, I just don't think well, it's going back to what we were saying earlier with the Spurs. Yeah, the Knicks are a different profile team, but they might not be they just might not be able to score enough with the roster as currently constructed.
I think you're dead on.
Cool. Well, I always like hearing that. That's probably a good place to sort of wrap it up. But I mean, Dave, I really appreciate you coming on to the Double Clutch podcast. It's not as rare as it used to be that we get people like yourselves calling in from the States, but we do really appreciate you taking the time.
Hey, my pleasure, man. I've made myself known by not saying no. So anytime, man. I always love to talk hoops. And, you know, I remember when starting my podcast, part of the reason I was able to do anything is because a lot of people said yes to me. So I like to do the same. And, this was fun, man.
Good. Well, yeah, really appreciate it. Have you got anything that you're working on at the moment? I know you've got the Daily Ding, and you've got Nerdish She Wrote. What else are you working on?
So we're doing the Daily Ding. It's a nice little recap. I actually listen to it myself when I wake up in the morning. And so a good way to kind of remind me, hey, this happened last night. And then, everything we're doing over at Count the Dings, man, I'm proud of all of it. Basketball Buds every Tuesday. We're doing, obviously, Nerdish She Wrote on Thursdays. And then our mailbag on Fridays. And it's a good time. We gotta put together a London live show. I wonder if we've got enough people in London. Can we get 500 people to pay money to watch a live basketball podcast. That's something I'll have to ask Jade.
Definitely give us a shout if you're planning it. We'll do some marketing for you and see if
there
we
you go.
Out.
Awesome, man. Yeah, this is fun.
Cool. Yeah, well, good to speak to you, and hopefully we'll do it again soon.
Absolutely, man. Take care, buddy.
Cheers. Thank you very much.
Yeah.